is a very important program. So that we are going to take up our food and fire. And we have also seen that things happening in David and
in capacity level. Thank you.
Chair, Mr. Sonthu and myself come some way in the legislature in the Western Cape. but I must relate to the committee, we had very strong rules those days that you must wear a tie. And one day he forgot his tie, so they gave him a...
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and good morning, honourable members. Perhaps just to comment on the previous situation, obviously, we're waiting a full report from the Housing Province on this matter. But after I discussed it with the Minister this morning, we've agreed also we will do a bit of a fairly deep level research into what's happening here. There are two, I think, concerns. One is there seems to be a bit of a pattern around this time of year. And we're not sure if there's something there that's happening. Is this a pre-planned thing or something? So trying to get a little bit into the heads of, there's been a couple of incidents, you know, over the last while. And trying to understand, is there something around the time of year that makes people, you know, go a bit funny perhaps? The second, perhaps an even more difficult one, is perhaps the nature of the event. And particularly, I think this last one has had some very odd connotations. And of course, one then raises the question around, for example, is this TV game kind of syndrome that's emerging here, dressing up in a banner of harbour and swords and that sort of thing. So perhaps trying to understand also a little bit about the psyche of these things rather than just the surface level, you know, what happened and what are we going to do about it, trying to get a little bit deeper into the heads of the perpetrators that we do understand it. So we will report back to you, certainly, Chair, on that process. But I want to thank you today for the opportunity for us to present. I think what is one of our successful programs in the department, namely the Kalibudi Math Literacy Program, a campaign that has been mounted this year. The presentation is going to be made by the Chief Executive Officer. She's appointed as a DDG in the department, but as she was saying, we've established a slightly different setup for this in government. It took a little bit of persuading initially to understand what we can refer to, I think, is an arm's-length type organisation. So Kalibudi is not just a normal line function part of the department. It's been established as a bit of a standalone entity. We've given it particular levels of support through a particular agency that's helping them with procurement matters, etc. And obviously this followed all the criticisms of our earlier literacy programme, where in the end people said it was the fact that they were just bogged down by bureaucratic tendencies that prevented them from doing their work. I hope, and perhaps you'll reflect on it today, a bit of a difference certainly in this particular instance, and that's why we do refer to Professor Mackay as the Chief Executive Officer of Kalibudi. She will be assisted by Mr. Zondini Matthews. He's the Chief Operating Officer within the Kalibudi office, and they will take us through a chair. As I indicated, we have a meeting, a President's Board meeting with the Religious Leaders Forum that I would have to attend later, so I would have to step out during the presentation, if that's all right. But thank you, Chair, and if I can hand over to Professor Mackay.
Thank you,
Peter.
Good morning, Professor Matula, good morning, and to honourable members of the Education Portfolio Committee. It's an honour for us to be here today to present what we believe is a very successful program. We will begin with a very short video, and I think the video touches quite a lot of the activities of the unit, and then we will be able to explain it in a little more detail.
Thank you.
latest video shot mainly the Karankua Toshikupe area, and we are obviously covering most of the sites in those provinces. If I might, I will begin with the aims of our presentation today. It's firstly to praise the Portfolio Committee about the progress we're making with the Karigurima advocacy campaign intended to enable 4.7 million adults to achieve basic literacy and numeracy by the period 2012. We also aim to inform the Portfolio Committee about some of the challenges we faced during the pilot phase, and these are challenges that we aim and will be addressing for the subsequent phases. And finally, to advocate for mass rollout of the campaign starting with the 2009-2010 financial year, where we expect to enroll 1.2 million adults across the country, and we'll be required to have 80,000 volunteer educators recruited and trained. I'm going to begin with the background that the constitution of our country 1996 declares education as a right, and it includes in that right adult basic education. However, many South African adults are still illiterate and people who have been denied this right in the past. It is for this reason that on the 3rd of February 2006, Minister Pandor established the Ministerial Committee for Literacy, and that committee was required, amongst others, to develop a strategic plan for mass literacy campaign in South Africa. The committee undertook quite a broad range of research and mapping exercises to look at the demographics and so on. On the 22nd of August 2007, Cabinet approved the operational plan of the mass literacy campaign, which was intended to enable 4.7 million unschooled and functionally literate South Africans to achieve a level of basic literacy. That number is half of the number of illiterates in the country. Cabinet noted that approximately 80,000 volunteer educators would need to be engaged in the periods 2009, 10 and 11 to reach the 4.7 million unschooled adults by 2012 at a total cost of 6.1 billion. I'll present a slide which gives an indication of the MSF allocations and the numbers needed subsequently. Cabinet also agreed that an interministerial committee chaired by the Minister of Education will oversee the implementation of the campaign and that it be launched by the Minister of Education. Cabinet approval provided for the Minister to determine an organisational structure and the delivery modality for the campaign. This particular slide gives an indication of the timetable and the targets as approved by Cabinet. In 2007, the year was spent, it was a gear up year. And the year was spent with preparation of materials and the setting up of various systems. This year, the 2008 year, has been a year in which we were targeting 300,000 learners. We required 24,000 volunteer educators and 2,400 supervisors and approximately 150 coordinators. And in the subsequent slide, I'll show the cascade, how this particular cascade works. The indicators for the next 3 years are 1.2 million learners across the country, requirement of 80,000 volunteer educators, 8,000 supervisors, and 800 coordinators. And this will be for the subsequent 3 years of a mass rollout. And we've envisaged 2012 to mop up any of the learners that we've missed and any adults who haven't yet been captured by the book slip through, that we will do what we call a mock-up here. The timetable that we presented here more or less parallels the timetable of the United Nations dedicated literacy for countries to reduce the literacy rate by half by 2015. This particular slide gives an indication of the models that we use for the implementation. As I've mentioned this year, we have approximately 150 coordinators at the provincial level. Each of those coordinators works in a ratio, and each one has to support and care for 20 supervisors. That is the level at which a lot of the monitoring occurs, where the coordinator selects and looks after 20 supervisors. We've been really fortunate at that level, because that is the level where the most expertise is required, that we have mainly postgraduates working at that level and graduates at that level. It's a small level, but there's quite a lot of responsibility required of people at that level. The supervisory level, each supervisor is required to select and train 10 volunteer educators. And at that level, the community is largely involved in helping to identify the educators. And we use community structures and church structures, and a lot of the community and communities of trust in communities to help us to select those. And I might add that the community development workers have really been phenomenal in helping us at that level. Those educators are trained by the supervisors, and the educators are then required to recruit 15 learners each. And we've given them 15 as a norm, and we require them to stick to that norm, so that we discourage learner drop off, and we expect them to report on learners who drop off, so that we are able to manage the steps and to keep a norm that is appropriate, so that we are able to reach the target. Thanks. Okay. Just to take people back to the State of the Nation address, where our president did announce in the address one of the APEX programs, and his statement is quoted there. After correcting the weaknesses in our basic program, which we identified last year, we shall this month launch the Curry Goody Maths Literacy Campaign, the Let Us Learn Maths Literacy Campaign, and this will include the training of master trainers who will provide full basic literacy classes for 300,000 adults and youth in 2008. Okay, and indeed, following that State of the Nation address, the campaign was launched by the Minister on the 28th of February, and the classes began firstly in the Eastern Cape on the 14th of April 2008. There was a launch, and Minister Pandor attended a maths program in Tombo. Simultaneously, the Curry Goody unit was established in the Department of Education as an arm's length unit. And the arm's length is intended to enable the unit to respond timelessly to campaign objectives. The organogram of the unit provides for a chief executive officer, a chief operations officer, four directors, one for special needs, and I'll refer to the special needs in a moment, and five multi-class admin support. The unit is supported by an external administrative agency and company, the firm of auditors called SABMT, and they were appointed through an open tender to assist the unit with procurement, data management, financial project management, and also human resource management, and the contracting of all the volunteers. Mr. Chairman, we have many successes that we would like to report, so many achievements today. The first is the development of our materials, and our materials are considered to be world-class I've been working alongside UNEX, the Commonwealth of Learning and the World Bank, and we know that the materials fare really well for campaign materials across the country. The materials also make a contribution to the 11 official South African languages, and they were developed by African language linguists and scholars. The materials are parallel, so in Gauteng, for example, it's very easy to run four languages in one class simultaneously because of the parallel nature. They are not translations, they are original developed materials, focusing on the linguistic structures and so. The materials have also, just for interest, been translated into Braille. We now have Braille in 11 languages, and Mr. Matthews and I have just left a workshop for training blind facilitators. We've been training blind facilitators over the weekend, and this workshop ends tomorrow. And blind facilitators are all matriculants. There are many with 1, 2, and 3 degrees, and they're unemployed and will be going back to their communities to set up classes for the blind. I've been working quite a long time on international campaigns, and this is really the first, although Cubitt did have some significant contribution, I think this is the first time ever in history that there's been a workshop for 100 blind teachers simultaneously to go out and tackle the problem as part of the literacy campaign. At the end of February, March this year, we also trained 60 deaf coordinators, and our contribution to the enhancement of languages is that everybody's entitled to learn through their mother tongue. And mother tongue for deaf people is sign language, and so deaf educators are teaching through the medium of sign language. And this has been really supported by the Association for the Deaf in South Africa, because often hearing teachers are not able to sign as well, and they're not accustomed to the culture of deaf, the deaf culture. And so the use of blind and deaf teachers to teach this part of the program has been supported quite considerably here and internationally. To carry on, our recruitment this year, our first cohort of learners, although our target was 300,000, we exceeded the target, and there are 360,000 learners across the country. To teach them, we've recruited and trained 24,000 volunteer educators, 2,800 supervisors, and 150 coordinators. It has been possible for those volunteers to teach after a week's training with intermittent training interventions. We've modeled the teaching. The materials are teacher-proof, and if I can, for every single lesson, there are 85 lessons, the teacher receives a desk calendar of 85 lesson plans. So, and basically do it by numbers, although they are trained. But every lesson plan overlaps the lesson, so that they are able to do the actual teaching. I come from distance education, and so in a way I was able to apply many of the principles of distance education to the learning process over here. We've also succeeded in some appointments and the advertising of posts for core personnel to run these units. We have our financial and risk management systems in place. They are fully operational. And we also have, using the structure that we have, internal monitoring and evaluation systems to ensure quality and control assurances for the campaign. We are also working with SACWA so that these learners, we've developed a portfolio for the assessment. There are 20 little assessment activities. It's a continuous assessment, and we assess them against the particular level one unit standards so that at the end of this program, 6-month program, they will achieve this. Our admin and management tools, all the forms, the registers, the monthly reporting templates are in place. And this is where we do quite a lot of our own research. The reporting templates each month are designed to capture other information. So we know we have a full database of every learner's biographical detail, and each month we capture indicators to do with numbers of dropouts, new learners coming in, material shortages and so on. And so we are completely on top of every little cascade. The database is able to link the learners with the teachers and the teachers with the supervisors, and in that way we're able to follow and to track. The statistical and demographic profiles of everybody are updated, and we use a statistician to give us, we do something called statistical mining, and we're able to give you a lot of trends. For example, we were amazed that 7.8% of our learners were disabled and already in the system. 79% of our learners are women. 80% of our volunteer educators are female. And we have an age profile where our volunteer educators, 66% of them fall into the category of youth, which indicates our role in penetrating the youth structures and also harnessing and calling to service unemployed youth. So we feel quite confident about that. We've had quite a lot of interaction in terms of with the Council of Education Ministers, HEDCOM, Provincial Expo, Senior Management, National Department. I've had a long ongoing relationship with UNICEF for the Commonwealth and SACWA, and as well as communities of trust. In our districts, we have set up what we call district literacy units, and these comprise of relevant stakeholders from traditional leadership, the chief, members of disability sector, women's organisation, a range of NGOs, particularly the disability NGOs and the CBOs and so on. last week, we reported to Cabinet on certain modifications that came about through the implementation. And these are modifications to the original plan, which is 260 pages long. Firstly, that with the appointment of SABNT, the auditing company, we've needed to make a whole range of modifications. The National Secretariat is now being replaced by the Curry Goody unit, which is passed by the Department of Education. The provincial secretariats are going to be replaced by the enrollment of senior officials who are already employed by the provincial departments. And this is intended to provide some kind of synergy between the Curry Goody office and the departments of the provinces. Initially, we were intended to go to mass rollout this year, and I am quite pleased that the target was reduced to only 200,000 learners, and the mass rollout has shifted to the three subsequent years, which have now a target of 1.22 million people. The appointment, as I've mentioned earlier, of the external administrative service provider has been really good because it frees us to focus on teaching and learning. But it's also meant that we've had to restructure our organogram, the unit organogram. Initially, based on what we saw in Cuba, we were going to have one manual that dealt with just a basic introduction to literacy. And we were concerned that it wouldn't be sustainable. And so we decided to target all the ADEC Level 1 unit standards. And we've developed a mother tongue literacy book. There are numeracy books, which are now also in all mother tongue. And the booklet called English for Everyone. but it's an oral English, spoken English for them. And then also an assessment portfolio in all the languages so that the learners can be continuously assessed. We've done quite a lot of work. The enthusiasm has translated into 60,000 extra learners, and in fact we've actually had to stop enrollment. People were kind of flocking through classes, and unfortunately due to the constraints we had to stop enrollment this year. But we have huge waiting lists of young people wanting to volunteer for next year, and huge waiting lists of learners hoping to come. And so, yeah, it's exciting to report also that on the 8th of August, that is last week, Cabinet approved all the changes outlined above, and Cabinet has advised that the campaign should continue until electricity has been eradicated in South Africa. I want to mention, I'll mention these really briefly, the impact and the benefits that the campaign is making, firstly in support of official language policy, and the fact that we've mastered a way of having 3 or 4 or 5 languages running parallel in a class at the same time. That has been happening through the materials that you are. And in certain areas where the languages are not, for example, where you do have multilingual classes in housing, we've mastered that way. And it's been really good for social integration as well. I might add, we have our first white learners in the Ekurhuleni areas. We have classes of white learners coming to classes, and they are happily using the Afrikaans material. The volunteer educators who work on the program are paid a stipend. They receive, we calculated the stipend in line with the CDW stipend, and they receive a stipend of 1,200 per month for a period of 6 months. And we know that these volunteers are unemployed, they're youth. They come from the poorest areas, mainly rural and informal settlements. And we feel that the stipend payment is making an impact on some of the poorest households in the country. And this is one of the important byproducts of the campaign. And on the one hand, we are teaching people who've been denied education, but we are also in some way putting additional income that is almost double Gorgor's pension into poor households. We've noticed also the stimulation of local economic activities, where our materials have been delivered at the local site by local contractors, and the catering for all our workshops has been done by local co-ops. We've really been able to manage that. They have 35 rand per day to provide a meal per learner, and we've trained, not per learner, per volunteer educator over the 5 days of training. And 35 rand times, I think we've worked out that 120,000 meals were catered for. And this was mainly going into local communities, into co-ops and women's groups. We feel that we've made a contribution to free basic or free education in the country. And this is really free. It's not the lowest quintile. It's free for everybody who enrolls. I've spoken about the materials. The community and social cohesion is also, I'm a sociologist by training, and for me it's been really important to see the kind of community cohesion that is happening. You go into an informal settlement and you might have 6 language groups in a class, and you say to learners, did you know Mrs. X before you came? And learners will say, no, but we saw her, but because they speak different languages, they didn't meet. And communities are coming together, and these classes are becoming learning groups and tea clubs almost, where people bring their tea and they sit and have tea together and learn. And there's a considerable community cohesion, and also the young people that are not able to read and write are in the same classes and being cared for by the older ones. It's really, for us, been quite amazing to go and have a look in terms of this kind of social education. At the same time, talk about the xenophobia. We know on our database that there are learners who do not have ID numbers, but who have passport numbers. And they are in classes, and they, although we didn't go out and look for them, they are there, and they are learning Tsonga, and they are learning local languages alongside our South African learners. And we think that in some ways it does in some ways tackle the xenophobic problem. The materials, the last section of the material that deals specifically with people from Africa and our neighbours, and in a way, even before the xenophobic problem reared its head, we somehow had a sensitivity that needed to be addressed. Because the community development workers work with us, we find that we've become points for SASA and for social development. They are coming in, they are able to use these groups as important groups for addressing social issues and IDs and so on. We've tackled all the vulnerable groups. We have many, many women, as I've mentioned, the youth. The age of 20% of our learners, 24% of our learners, are 60 years and older. This is really important for us. We're needing to work with health for reading spectacles for a lot of them. There are a lot of cataracts that we are seeing as well. And as I mentioned earlier, 7.8% of our learners define themselves as being disabled, either physically blind or deaf. Where do the classes happen? Minister Pandor came up with the phrase, having good wherever you are, and indeed our classes are everywhere. They're in homes, mainly homes, on the farms, prisons, clinics, we're in containers, we are all over. I'm going to ask Mr. Matthews to take over. He likes to tackle the systemic challenges. But before he starts, so I'd just to say that these are now being addressed. All of them are there, but they're challenges that we needed to know. Thank you, Mr. Matthews.
Thank you, Chairperson and honourable members. I'll go straight to the thing without giving any introduction about. You recall at the earlier slide that the professor spoke about the budget that was approved with the rollout of the message of the campaign. And that statement, the 6.1 billion was approved with the approval of the operational plan, created problems for us. Because most South Africans missed to interpret that statement in a context. They thought that the 6.1 billion was going to be released with the approval itself. And people out there tend to forget that government works on MTF processes or trying them type of budgeting processes. What then happened, Chair, was that because of that process, funds were made available over time. Starting with the current triennium. The operational plan that was approved on the 22nd of August anticipated a per capita expenditure of 1,269, which for the target of 300,000 as approved by Cabinet required 381 million budget allocation. Unfortunately, 350 million was made available and which then immediately created a deficit of 31 million. You recall, Chair, on the 30th of July, there was an announcement about the CPI extending at 11.6. What we are presenting to yourselves about the 31 billion takes into account the CPI X at that time, I think it was 11.5, and it increased by 0.1%. And that, of course, would have an impact. As the professor has mentioned, that when the minister launched the campaign, she used the phrase, wherever you are, carry good that will happen wherever you are. And when the word of mouth went out, there was lots of enthusiasm that we actually saw among illiterate South Africans, and people literally voted by law in their numbers. The professor had indicated that by the 31st of May, we had 360 thousand learners that had registered, which translated to 60,000 learners more than the target. Again, if you use the per capita expenditure of 1,269, an additional 60,000 learners mean an additional 77 million required, which unfortunately we didn't have because the allocation was 350 million is what indicated. We noted, Chair, when we came in around April, that there were the orders that were placed might have been incorrect. It appears to us that some languages had more numbers ordered than the actual numbers, and the ones that needed more numbers to actually be ordered and less orders being placed on them. Now, to correct that, immense lots and lots of challenges that we need to face. First, the orders were already placed. In production, in some situations, it already happened. And the books were there. And we found this you know, supply of materials in languages that you actually didn't need. And the shortage of the languages that you actually needed to do. What we also found out, Chair, was that even the suppliers that were identified were not that innocent themselves. Those people saw an opportunity to make a quick buck, you know, as quickly as they could. There was lots of overpricing that we found out. It was through negotiations, you know, that prices now and again began to go down. Now, you see, again, the issue of the order then resulted in slow deliveries. Well, in some cases, we had to catch up with materials that were produced late, and then as we're in class, materials weren't there, the volunteers were there, they didn't have the materials, and of course this raised the anxiety levels of everybody that was involved. The other challenge relates to provinces that have already started implementing their own literacy programs. The KwaZulu-Natal was a huge challenge for us. We managed to have a meeting with the leadership of Masfundi Sani last week, and there are fundamental agreements that we've reached. And the intention, of course, is to appraise the political and administrative principles as to what needs to be done so that we create the synergy between Masfundi Sani and Karikuta as per the recommendations of the minister. And what we seem to be picking up is emerging as some form of goodwill from the colleagues from Masfundi Sani. So we'll be making that report to the minister soon so that we can see how we can begin to activate the recommendations that we came up with. Now, the other major challenge, Chair, related to NGOs who are currently providing literacy programs. It appears that most of them were under the impression that we are going to sort out the rollout of the campaign. People thought that we were going to prioritize the campaign. Some had submitted proposals. One proposal that we don't forget to make reference to is where, for instance, their own per capita expenditure translated to 5,000 per lena. And on top of that, they expected us to give them the materials that we use in the campaign. So the 5,000 per capita did not include the materials. They expected that those materials were actually delivered to them. And of course, if you use the per capita expenditure or the unit cost for that one and add it to that amount, you see what the scheme would have escalated. Now, 5,000 is more than twice the current per capita expenditure that we have. So you can see the animosity that actually came up as a consequence of that. We are also faced with a couple of operational challenges, most of which, Chair, as the CEO has already indicated, we found solutions to us. There are lots of them, which we regarded as Achilles heel, but we've managed to correct them. The first one is some of them may sound very pedestrian, but when you really go to the T of the operation in this matter, you find that if they are not handled, they may actually trigger us. The correct numbers and identities of learners and volunteers, and in some situations, we are faced with the legitimacy or lack of it of the learning sites. If you recall, the CEO indicated that each educator is supposed to have a minimum of 15 learners. That's what defines the legitimacy of the learning center. If a learner or a volunteer educator may be faced with lots of dropouts, then that creates the opposite of that one. The issue for us of retention is as important as creating access for the adult learners to go there. Remember that issue about the quality of survival, as the comparativist would actually put it, is very crucial for us. Because at the end of the day, we're aiming to eradicate 4.7 million adult learners who are illiterate. If they drop out, that one person will actually make us fall short of the 4.7. So it's very crucial that we create that platform and that these centers are able to retain the learners. The issue of the identities, the identity numbers, is very crucial in the sense that you will know, you will actually put some form of tracking. The professor spoke about profiling on the tracking system as to who the dilemmas are, where they come from, what socio-economic conditions are they coming from, and all that kind of stuff. What we also noted, despite the fact that where the TIDES reporting system templates have been released, even the procedures that actually are supposed to be followed tend to be a challenge in some situations. In some situations, you find people forgetting that they are accounting lines. I mean, you have a clear tier of volunteers that we have, from coordinators being the top and the volunteer educators at the lowest rungs of that cascade. And people just calling directly. And then the coordinator doesn't know what a volunteer educator would have reported, would act on that, and the coordinator wouldn't know what he would be acting on. In some situations, you find somebody claiming to have a class somewhere running, and the supervisors and coordinators in that area would know nothing of such learning centers. So we're trying to find a way to create a system that we don't have ghost classes first and ghost learners as a consequence of that. People will always find a way to try to beat the system. That's why the tight control mechanisms that we've created there are important for us. In some situations, we have provided everybody involved with a list of their roles and responsibilities, timelines that go with those responsibilities, because it's always important for us that we have timeless reported on this thing so that we can account. We have bi-weekly meetings with the minister, so you can see how tight the control around the state is. I've mentioned the issue of the incorrect orders that were placed, and I will respond to that. The other issue, of course, relates to claiming for stipends of services rendered. I'm not sure what is it that causes this problem. I'm not sure whether it is influenced by the level of the program itself, that it's a program to eradicate illiteracy. And there's a tendency for people actually providing this service to actually get trapped into that mode. People don't know that you will never be paid until you submit an invoice, and an invoice must be properly captured. Sometimes there's that slippage. Sometimes people think that they can just fax an invoice, and you can pay on the basis of that fax invoice. And when we know that the system would actually require the original invoice, unless there's a certification of the copy. So we normally face those challenges. As a consequence of that, sometimes because we're controlling a government fiscus and the way we actually spend it, you find people getting impatient. The abuse that you find from people, the threats that in some situations you find from them, and this thing cuts across all levels of the campaign itself. We have made a determination, particularly around the operational challenges, Chair and the honourable members, that if everybody is involved in the campaign, the volunteers and the service providers can find sustainable solutions to deal with this. We strongly believe that is doable. If people can remember their roles and responsibilities, if people can remember why they are in the campaign, if they can remember why they are in the campaign in the first place, we strongly believe that some of these things they are not major threats. They are issues that can be dealt with. Proceeding to the campaign, the advocacy campaign. Chair, as from next year, we'll be massifying the rollout. Professor has indicated that we're targeting 1.22 million learners. So we're urging this House and all South Africans to play a role in beginning to propagate that message out there. If there are family members that we know, or friends, or anyone we know, we really are encouraging ourselves to go and let those colleagues know that Karikud is going on. We're looking at everybody who's dropped out before they reach grade 7, or any person who's never been to school. We have a call center, the numbers are provided there. The professor mentioned the issue that the campaign is program is provided free of charge. It's a good model of you know what the documents, particularly of the ruling party, proclaimed around free education. The campaign is an example of that. We're not targeting, as Professor said, the first two quintiles. We're providing education free of charge for everybody that gets there. All learners need to do is to show up, commit to learn, and they learn. The professor gave a cascade about that relates to ratios. If you do your simple arithmetic, if we're targeting 1.22 million, and that's a ratio of one educator to 15 learners, we will require next year 81,000 volunteer educators that must be recruited and trained. And of course, 81,000 volunteer educators translates to 81 active learning centers. But which educator has a learning center? Remember that issue about 81,000 learning centers. And we're paying the educators every stage, as the professor said, we use the CDW model, $1,200 a month. So we everybody who has a matric as a minimum qualification can actually be can register as a volunteer educator. Of course, the cascade goes as what indicated, that we need, if you have 81,000 educators, you need 8,100 supervisors who are paid 2,300 stipends a month, and will require 405 coordinators, each of whom will be paid a stipend of 5,000 a month. What is also important, Chair, is what was emphasized in the last last line there, that the program will continue to be offered in 11 official languages, including Braille as well as sign language. We're not going to read what the minister had said when she read her budget level speech on the 15th of May. But if you look at the statement that she had made, even in the pilot phase, we've begun to implement those statements, and meaningfully so. And the most important one for us, which relates to the advocacy campaign, is the third sub-bullet there. The campaign has a strong community component. It is mass-based and relies on voluntarism and community participation. And therefore, the community development workers have been a vital support of the campaign, as have been the traditional leaders, religious leaders. So it's very important for us that we keep on sensitizing people about the importance of it, so that at the end of the day, as she had said, the education does change, the community does change that. In conclusion, Chair, we strongly contend that the campaign has taken off and has enthused masses of illiterate South Africans. We are therefore gearing ourselves up as we are requesting South Africans to gear themselves up for a mass rollout of the campaign in 2009. We are of the opinion, and of course it has been articulated because it's a constitutional imperative, that the campaign is intended to correct one of the degrading ills of the past. We are aiming at eradicating illiteracy among all South Africans. And the cabinet decision last week, or the recommendation made that we should continue to eradicate the 9.6 and anything else that might have, you know, made that number to escalate, is really encouraging. And the CEO had mentioned the partners that we're working with. There's lots of private companies that are interested in our materials. We've been talking with lots of departments, the lead one being correctional services, with lots of learners who are involved in correctional facilities. The EPWT, the CDW, has been speaking with lots of these departments who have direct interest in the company. And fortunately, the minister has given us a go-ahead that we should actually speak with them if there is a commitment to fund a portion of what they are involved in. It will actually offset the shortfall that we actually were facing. Just on that point, Chair, I must also mention that the shortfall that was indicated is a process that the minister has gone through to rectify those shortfalls. Remember the Treasury Committee memorandum that we had to prepare for the minister to make the request as required. We strongly contend, the Chair, that in the relevance and the importance of the campaign, the impact thereof, is seen as we have seen in the video film, that the enthusiasm, that the excitement you see in literate people who joined the campaign, who could not read, their Bibles, as they say. Couldn't write their names. They couldn't count their money. You saw the old man saying, I cannot even read money. In other words, that person cannot differentiate between a rand coin and a 2 rand coin. They cannot read or distinguish what money stands for. It's really been empowering and liberating for us as activists who are involved in this thing. It is quite true that we are involved in something huge, and we want to put it to yourself that we are really involved in what you refer to as a silent revolution. And we hope that this revolution will really... I know the young people are laughing because they want to relate this to something else, but I will not get into that. But it's really taken off, and we strongly believe it succeeds, as Cuba has succeeded, and the countries that are implementing the Cuban model. We really are on our way to liberating this South Africa. So thank you, sir.
Thank you ever so much. It does sound exciting. I'll allow my members to comment.
Thanks, Chaplain. We really appreciate the work you've done, and I'm sure we are in the right direction. One or two concerns. The first one is regarding the role of the CDW. I want to know exactly what their role is in this campaign, because in our constituencies we are experiencing problems where councillors feel that the CDWs are taking over their duty. What also are not happy about the CDW. I think we don't want to add onto the problem. So let us maybe clarify the role of the CDW in this regard. And then, second detail, I think the intention of introducing this campaign was not, but I need to be corrected if I'm wrong, was not to replace other campaigns. Because watching the video, I see that the participants are mainly adults. And this is aimed at targeting all South Africans. We have a lot of youth who are illiterate, whom I think will benefit. I just want to find out how is the youth responding to this, and seeing that we have got a lot of adults in this program, how are we addressing the problems that we were encountering with the adult education? Like, some adults felt that after getting the basic literacy, they want to start their own business and they want to have specific skills. Are we, as a company, able to do that, or is it outside our boundaries, and that are we complementing what is supposed to be adult education with us? And lastly, Chairperson, I did not get it clearly as to how the systematic challenges around overpricing of materials and the slow deliverance of materials are being addressed. We have been informed that these challenges are being addressed, and I'm interested in knowing as to how these are being addressed. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me also appreciate the presentation and then the excitement from our side as we have been watching this campaign. For instance, at my area, my constituency office, the traffic, and then my worry was that the youth school only, and then they have not yet maybe used this other area. And then one other concern is the distance. But some of the some others traveling a distance from their home to that we should also maybe ensure that we check the distance, because it can also impact negatively. Maybe we will be experiencing dropouts due to distance. And then one other thing is this, I'm not sure whether we have the coordinators or being teachers at school. And then that for my area, not necessarily to say teachers, they shouldn't participate, but for them to run the campaign. And then as we also know that with the unemployment, the unemployment rate, and then to let us just ensure that we focus on unemployed, maybe those graduates who are not at school, and also I heard that you indicated some metric, people who are without job, and then also the unique mention of chief, who is also the cut off, but could we also maybe cut against the abuse by the some of the chiefs of the staff will bear with me that I usually report to, because I'm experiencing a serious problem about our what is the mother, the wife of the chief. Yeah, whom she's trying to, she's active, but sometimes activeness tend to be negative, or sometimes she abuses her power. As we experience this from the SAFA project, where she sometimes grab whatever project, and then the project we run at the traditional office, and then maybe even taking this project from the ordinary woman, and then claiming that she's running those projects. And then I'm sure we'll also cut against that abuse, that this is really correctly run. Yeah, but and then also we are there just empty to see that everything is properly run. And then that was what I wanted to. One of the abuses which we experience is that you find that let me take that example of SAFA, where people are giving food passes. And then you find that for a poor person to get that food passer, she must first contribute a certain amount. And then you find that maybe we say this campaign is free of charge, but somewhere, somehow, those tactics which are used by some people.
go back and to ascertain where they start and what were previous initiatives. And quite clearly before this Gary Goudet, Let Us Learn campaign, I mean, there have been previous literacy campaigns that our government has called for. I remember during the term of Kada Asmao that there was a very strong call on literacy and a literacy project. And quite clearly one sees this probably as a progression of those projects that have been started. But I think it is going to be important that, that we consider that projects have run in the past, that they have not run as successfully as we would like it to be over a sustained period of time, and that we must make sure in managing and in administering this Kari Gude project that it is so tightly managed and controlled that we eradicate some of the problems and the stumbling blocks that we've encountered in the past. Thank you, Chair.
I'm going to base my comments on what I experienced practically in my constituency. I've noticed that it's very important that the constituency offices must be directly, involved in this thing, or at least, somehow, because as MPs we have a direct link with councillors, ward councillors. That these ward councillors have ward committees and they are very, very influential. This links up with the fact that, your CDWs invariably do not have a very good working relationship with their ward councillors. And if you do not involve ward councillors in a way indirectly via the constituent office, you may hit some snags, because these sites are located within wards that are under the control of your ward councillors, and you really need their support one way or the other. In the recruitment drive, the volunteers, can be more successful if they have the support of the counselor, because the counselor can actually play a very important advocate role when he has his community meetings. And we can also come in during the course of such meetings to propagate Karikud. Now, this being such a very good program, I realized that, one volunteer was saying to me, I've been doing this now for the last 3 months, but I haven't been paid as yet. some of these very good programs fall flat sometimes because, somewhere along the line, people lose interest because they feel they are not being properly looked after. And then I decide, let me call the official of the department. I'm taught from this one to the other one. And then I'm told, no, this one is based in Putarichara, which is way, in Kwakwa. I was hoping that perhaps everything is centralized at the provincial office. But to be very honest, that was the first time that I interacted with him on
on this issue. But I could not get hold, you know, of this person who is really in charge. Now, my concern was, now this is one thing, because we need information as MPs to be able to pass it on to our community, not for our own sake, you know. So I'm trying to say to you that the rest it is important that when you do interact with those people, I can now understand, you know, who is the coordinator, who is the supervisor, and so on. But in my ignorance yesterday, I think someone could really take advantage of themselves and the coordinator. And the coordinator, one was based in Botabelo, I think that is a different person. I hope that if he is a district coordinator, he's based in the district office. I'm just merely expressing some kind of frustration that I experienced yesterday. I'm not being critical. I'm merely just raising this, you know, as a concern that which, if addressed, could assist, you know, in making the problem even more successful. And then the volunteer says to me, "All right, he's a retired teacher, right? Teacher party. He's used to chalkboards and so on. Are we also qualifying for being supplied with small chalkboards and so on?" He conducts the class in her own sitting room, if you like. Now, he called these ladies on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. Because she says you must, they have actually said, you make sure that you don't interfere with us on a Monday, immediately after the weekend, and Friday, the beginning of our weekend. but she says they are very, very enthusiastic, and I don't know, this one to add to the fact that, you know, people are generally very excited, you know, about this program. Very, very excited. But she says there are these small frustrations, you know, in terms of using this particular kind of site and not perhaps having, yeah, and so they haven't yet been supplied with material. But one does accept that it will be coming in due course. Perhaps as time goes on, I might come back with a completely different report. But just to say that, you know, anticipating that we'll be having this issue, I decided to do a little bit of research around my area in advance, and this is what I want to report in appreciation of the fact that you are guiding me very strong. But if we can really, especially, you know, when it comes to the salaries of these people, make sure that the public responds appropriately.
Thank you.
Yes, you can respond.
Thank you. I'll start, and I'm sure Mr. Matthews will bless. I would like to actually start with the role of the CDW, the question on the CDWs. And I'm answering this because in my previous post, I was the Director of Adult Education at UNISA, and I trained most of the CDWs in South Africa because I know their roles quite well. Sorry, I wasn't quite your frog now. The role that we expect of them, I also know that there are tensions between them and the councillors. So we had actually wanted them to be ad hominem members of ward committees. But I know those problems because I've worked with them for the last 3 or 4 years. What we expected from the CDWs was mainly advocacy work that they did door to door, because that is what they do. They should be doing door to door. They should know the households in their wards, so they should be able to tell us in which households there are people who haven't been to school, or that there are underage or there are kids in the household that have dropped out of the school system. So we expected that from them. We also expected them to assist us to identify venues that are appropriate, that are walking distance. And I was disappointed to hear that a lot of them were going to school, because we've encouraged, and most of our classes, from our own indicators, are that most of them are in schools, are in homes, because the schools, by and large, haven't been giving us access. We actually struggle to get into the schools. So I was quite surprised to hear that. So the CDWs, we know of those problems. We more or less, they mobilise the youth through the Youth Commission and so on. That is primarily the role that they have. And we have been asking them to use those sites where people don't have IDs. They have been helping us to get IDs and to link people with SASA and to bring in the help. They should be unblocking blockages for us, and mainly that's the role. I just want to also address the notion of the youth, that it seems to be mainly older people. I do have a chart, and I don't know if I'll be able to show it. A quarter of the enrollment, 26% are above the age of 60, but 20% of the learners are in the category of youth, and I think about 5 or 6% of those are even below the age of 20. So there are many kids that are dropping out of the school system. In fact, we've come across quite a few 15-year-olds who've never been to school, quite a lot. And we can give you much more precise data on the age distribution. But I do know that 20% of the learners, in fact, yeah, 20% are young. They fall into the category of youth. We have a lot of street children, twilight children. There are lots of children on that program. And we're hoping that we will be able to refer those to skills training at some stage, although that is outside of our mandate. Is there anything on this that you want?
Chair, there was a question that related to a possibility that the current building may be viewed as a place of haven. Part of the recommendations were made to the minister, even at the time the Ministerial Committee of Literacy was in existence, was that she should consider, as a word they are using currently, revamping adult education and training. There is a committee she has appointed, which is supposed to be reported to her by the end of this month on the recommendations of their work. The work of that committee doesn't only concentrate on adult basic education and training. It serves across the entire continuum of adult education and training. So that what was spotted actually almost immediately, because of the materials that we use in curriculum, there seems to be some challenges that ABET level 2 are saying they'll be faced with, because they can't match the level of materials that we're using, particularly in the mother tongue that the learners would want to learn. Most of them in the ABET classes are using the language of economy, and it becomes a problem to retain the learners who are there because of the language barrier. So what was recommended, in fact, almost immediately, because the first graduates of this program will be in October, but the first cohort is expected to graduate in October. That's the last six months, in October. When they then get this excitement retained and can be absorbed in ABET level 2,
with the current provisioning in APET level 2, they'll drop out in the first week. The director we met with from Free State was saying, you'll excuse my language, Chair, because it's something that is quoted from here. The material they are using, the MP, I'm glad he's here from Free State, is absolute rubbish. There's no way in the world that they can match what is happening in Karigude in formal ABET classes. And it's something that the colleagues have begun to look into. And the professor is assisting them, although the results are mandated again to develop the material. So we volunteer the linguists that we've used and the practitioners, language practitioners that we use in developing the Karigude material to assist with the development of this work. So basically Karigude is definitely not a replacement. But what we're trying to do, which is what we've been saying to the colleagues, was there's a resistance even from the provinces that we've taken over their level one classes, basically. And we're saying to them, look, you should get excited. You keep on claiming that we are underfunded. If there's a program of government that comes in to alleviate your financial burdens, you then have to aim for the other levels that you are actually the sole provider thereof. Like in APET level 2, although we strongly believe that even in Karigude, the latter parts of the programs, which are intended to consolidate, because it's after the fourth theme, that in terms of UNESCO definition, that the learners should be literate. But we have two other themes that follow those themes, that actually would then consolidate what they do or the literacy that they would have attained. That's why we're extremely confident that having gone to Karigude, they would easily access ABET level 2, although some of them can even access ABET level 3. But we don't want to, you know, raise hope and make people believe that they'll come to Karigude and out of the blue and they go to formal ABET, they go to level 3. We don't want to do that. We don't want to get loggerheads in Ibaka as well. So, honorable member, what we are saying is that with the restructuring of adult education and training, the challenges that ABET is to face, and we hope that they'll be addressed in that manner. There are lots of them. And you recall what the focus actually with the so-called ABET classes is not adult-based education and training. People in the public adult learning centers, the members will know this, have been concentrating on providing matric certificate for adult learners. Because it's adult learners, it's assumed that they are providing what is supposed to be ABET, which is the core function of those centers, but they do it at a higher level. But with this one, as I'm saying, it stretches across the entire continuum. It will look into the basic literacy and educational needs, as well as, you know, a post that type of situation. The secondary question that we raise relates to the schemes part of it, that people would want to come to this thing, to access a scheme for them to self-employ, or to be, we are going to have a meeting with the CETA. I've advised the CEO that we've got to call all of them in one meeting. There's lots of challenges on the radio program on Monday about how succeeding or not succeeding CETA have been. There was some bold person who even went to an extent of mentioning the ones that have failed, deal money out of the 24 CETA that are there. But we want to engage with them so that there is a linkage, a direct linkage, even at our level, or particularly for the ones that are doing the correctional services one, of course they do skills training. The ones that are employed are also doing skills development. It is hope because the CETA is actually providing those. It would be good that at some point in time, that whatever literacy program we provide, or basic adult education that we provide, it has to be linked to that skill. But our main aim is to deal with illiteracy or lack of numeracy for people to begin to navigate the requirements that are basic for them to acquire those skills. If we are able to do that, we'll be playing a meaningful role in addressing that matter. Chair, there was a question that relates to overpricing and what we're doing to address the late deliveries. We met with the CEO of the government printer. When we're supposed to be presenting to the committee, it was the social cluster with the economic cluster in a joint meeting. We met with the CEO there, and we've arranged a meeting with him. But what we then have done is to request even the government printer to give us indicative prices if they were to be asked to produce this material, how much it would cost. In some situations, you will recall the government printer the list of printers or suppliers that we can actually go and request a quotation from. What we picked up is that most of their prices are less than the prices that are quoted by the producers of materials that are procured through the SABNT. So we've convened a meeting with SABNT and literally produced those quotations and gave them over to them. But look, you've got to find a way to negotiate for reduced prices. There's no way in the world that we can agree with yourselves to buy a single book, which is twice the amount that can be provided elsewhere. It's inconsiderable. But we can say we've been successful that the initial quotes or the initial prices that we had to contend with when we began have been somewhat reduced, I would say, to be comfortable about 25% already, because we're buying in bulk. And we keep on saying, in fact, there's another meeting that we said we're going to coordinate, because we want to begin to agitate this social consciousness, even among the suppliers themselves. One of them has generously donated a computer, not one for me, but there are computers that have donated because they've received lots of income from the orders that they actually had to deal with. So we're beginning to engage in that manner so that as much as possible, we try by all means to reduce the prices. The challenge again, Chairperson and honorable members, because we have this bulk order that we made. We never anticipated that there could have been a shortage of paper. That's one of the challenges that we never anticipated this one. And companies were telling us we're running out of paper, we've run out of a binding wire, wire binder. And we have problems that we have to deal with these things, we have to change our specs because we needed the materials on site. Okay. In some situations, we had to produce materials with plastic binders because we wanted those materials on site. We did not compromise on the quality. We did not sacrifice that much on the quality of the book itself, but we had to change the specs so that we're able to give them time to really run with this thing and to get the materials down there. That somewhat addressed the issue of the price.
So the specs are not expected.
No. Not the specs. Not the specs. Yes, thank you, I knew you'd come back. Again, the one that seems to be another problem relates to the delivery of the material. There is no problem with the delivery of the material from the producers to Skynet. What we seem to be picking up, there is a problem with the delivery between Skynet and the internet side. We've managed to identify that one. The next meeting we're having with SABNT, we actually are going to stop on Skynet. We need solutions because we can't always be told that people go to Skynet and find piles and piles and piles of materials that they themselves do not know is there. As we've been saying, we're running short of seasonal material. We find out that the seasonal material is sitting at Skynet or it has been delivered to a wrong province. Eastern Cape is looking for a lot of material. They have Sichuan material, which materials are actually required in Northwest in most of it. So we find those problems that we try to deal with, and we've begun to refuse to pay for the delivery until we are convinced that the person who signed for that consignment is the person who actually was supposed to have received that consignment. So the advice that relates to the one last point here that I think I need to. It's a question that was raised, not that, just two more. It's a question that was raised by the MP, you said, Chris Fletcher, relating to the payment of stipends. I don't have the right answer for you for this one. So I can say that right at the outset. You see, the requirements we have for us to be able to pay, at least from the volunteer educator, we want that monthly report, and want to register. Okay. You'll find claims, which in most cases are true, that the volunteer educators have submitted those requirements.
either to their supervisors or directly to FABMC. When they submit directly to FABMC, the thing cannot be linked to the supervisor. If you cannot link it to the supervisor, you obviously cannot link it to the coordinator. And therefore, these two tiers of managers who are involved at that level cannot account for this thing that the volunteer dictator claims to have been submitted. So it creates a problem for us because we can't track that. Secondly, when we began, even FABMC appears to have undermined the enormity of the campaign. They seem to have downplayed some of the administrative requirements that are going to be there. And in some situations, they were slow in creating the systems. Now, these stipend payments are not done through PESAR. They've created another system to do that. Now, in some situations, you'll find somebody who would have submitted details of an active account because they paid something to make that account to be active. And the stipend is not forthcoming. The account becomes inactive. And when they pay, the thing kicks back because the account is dormant. Mm-hmm. And you find volunteers, and it appears where the problem seems to be, is around the volunteer education.
If I can interject, that 49% of our payments are returned, either because of incorrect bank details or dormant accounts, and this is a major problem.
Or a wrong digit of the ID number, or a wrong digit of the account number itself. So what we then have agreed with FABMC, they've negotiated, is it APSA?
Yes.
They've negotiated with APSA that we can create accounts for people, particularly that we're going to be faced with 80,000 people that are coming in next year. They'll be able to create this this account for the volunteer educators that are coming in so that at least those things are kept. Mm-hmm. Or there's some level of confidence that they'll be kept active for whatever period of time until the stipends are paid. That's one way of looking at it. But the issue for us, for audit purposes, is no way in the world I will sign any claim without an assurance that these two requirements have been submitted. The report, at least, and the register. Because we can only confirm that there's a classroom by knowing that there's a register that has been submitted. Otherwise, we'd be paying, you know, for ghost activities that are happening and all that. And the requirements are not that major. And for the past 3 months, we have not been tying people to the team, the report on the exact team they are at the time of the claim. We just wanted to know the number of classes there. So we've been lenient ourselves. But as from July, we then have literally demanded that we need to have an indication as to where the educators are in terms of the material, so that we can actually track the progress. Because people say they are there for almost 4 months, and you find that they are still dealing with team number one. And well, the adults will never reach the last one, and at the end of the 6 months, people will become literate. Even the pilot then will be the pilot of a pilot and the pilot of another pilot, which will never assist them. So that's the situation. But we take the point that for us to have this thing succeeding, that most of these colleagues are unemployed. 1,200, is like mana. You don't give them that money on time, and you have a despondent case of a volunteer down there. We're not going to succeed with this thing. And of course, the bad vibes have begun to emerge,
yeah.
And we're beginning to address them. We're grateful that you have actually echoed this. We will look at it. And of course, the you raised the issue whether people will get teaching support material. Yes. The answer is a portable chalk. In fact, when we met with Masoud Islam, we were told that North Flipchart. It's something that used to be called a T, not T square. What is that thing, the three-legged thing, Professor
Masoud?
What was the tripod? Masoud Islam uses a two-legged one. And they go to Karikud and they find the three-legged one. Because of the three-legged one, they know they are not in Masoud Islam. So they've begun to even identify this small thing. Oh, it's a three-legged stand that is there. Oh, I'm in Karikud, it's the correct one. If they want to be in Masoud Islam, they get out of that class almost immediately and run to the next available Masoud Islam class. The last point, Chair, relates to what the Honourable Member agrees about the progression of the project. Yes, you are correct, sir. Fortunately, you hinted on the one that Professor knows as well, and that Professor Kata Asmal again, the family.
You would note the word reported on several occasions in this house, as DJ had intimated, that the family was actually bogged down by what people regarded as bureaucratic red tape. And that's the reason this one has been created to be an arm's length type of a unit for us to respond to the implementation imperatives. That's why, for the recall, planning was run from the department. With this one, the issue that relates to procurement, administration per se, are run by a unit, which was identified, an agent that was identified to attend. So that we don't get bogged down by those requirements that anything that is more than 100,000, you must advertise the term. Well, everything we do is always more than 100,000. I mean, every day we almost sign invoices. Chair, it's money that I can dream about. Those numbers that we find in the CAO, I don't play the lottery, no. But they are huge numbers, lots of zeros every day. And there's no way in the world that we could have succeeded in implementing those things. And we strongly believe by doing that, and from the lessons that we learned when we responded to what we're seeing as the failures of Sunday, we've incorporated all those things into the campaign itself. We've preempted some of them and put structures to address those things. But you are correct. It's a continuation of the loss and loss of literacy projects that the department has done. Thank you.
I came out that I was advocating the use of constituency offices and countries.
In most of the provinces, in most of the provinces, the coordinators have been told to contact the councillors, and I'm prepared to say that in 99% of the cases, they've had to liaise with the councillors. And in Limpopo in particular, we had a lot of support from the constituency officers. We have had support from the councillors. We also are well aware of the abuse of powers. And that is why in the district, we've put together structures that traditional leadership might be one or two members on a particular committee. But you would have a school principal, you would have a counsellor, you would have a whole range of other stakeholders in the community coming onto those committees, because we are aware, again, I draw on my kind of sociological background. I would also say that perhaps we would really appreciate having some kind of basis where we can also work with the constituency offices, if that were possible. If it could be much more formalised and much more structured, it would really be helpful. So we don't, because we don't have secretariats in the provinces, we are kind of free-floating. There are no provincial bases. National, the whole campaign revolves around national. And that's possibly why you mentioned also that the coordinators, some of them are school principals or school teachers. We expect of them 10 hours a week at that top level, at the very top level, that would be senior people in the community. But 97% of the operatives on this campaign are unemployed people. 97% do not have another source of income. But the very top structure, the 150 people that we have at the top, they're mostly employed in the gender commission. We've got somebody from the staff, we've got a nurse and so on. Those are mostly employed. So we actually rely on them because they have transport, they have an office base somewhere that they can use as the infrastructure and the cell phone. And so at that level, and we have had permission from the SGs to be able to use those people. But as we go down the cascade, more and more, the supervisors are unemployed graduates. We did approach SAGDA to give us those graduates. But there are some teachers involved, and we actually think that we are instilling quite good values for teachers who somehow remain detached from community activities. They feel that they're not part of the community, and in this way, we think that we're giving a good value.
No, thank you, Han. I don't understand why they have cut a little bit.
Yeah.
I was a bit surprised.
Statement or the request that you have made that we should prepare common statements is a very useful
We will send that statement by Thursday. We will get it before end of the week. But tomorrow we're wrapping up the workshop with the blind. So we'll be back in the office on Thursday. We'll definitely get that statement on Thursday. We'll of course send it via the chief here, who then we have our own lingo in the office. If he doesn't do that, he knows it's fine. Because I know the professor is going to call me, because the professor has my phone number. So we will definitely prepare that statement. But what that statement basically brought will hint on some of the items that were hinted on in the advocacy part of the campaign. Of course, we'll give you a short bullet point about what the campaign is about, what it was intended to do, and what the aims and objects of it are. It's something that captures that. Secondly, what is it, as you are saying, what is it that the communities are expected to do to make it successful? The first one, of course, because it's intended to obliterate illiteracy, we need to be targeting all illiterate South Africans to participate. So that message must come across. The difficulty, which is a counter type of a problem, when you call people to participate in a campaign, it becomes difficult when you tell them you've hit your target, therefore win, which was a problem for Facebook. For us, it's a problem that relates to budget allocation, and unfortunately we can't work outside that. We can't spend money we do not have. So it's always crucial that what we will do, of course, that will also assist the members to begin to do the projections in terms of what we know, where the literacy levels are, so that if we're saying, like in the Eastern Cape, we've hit more than 100,000 already in the pilot year, if next year the numbers are escalated to, I don't know, maybe 500,000 or whatever the number might be, then when you go to the Eastern Cape, you know you're talking around that number. When you go to Free State, if the number is 1,000 or 100,000, you're speaking around that number, so that we get as many people registering. What were the raised with cabinet through the minister's memos was that, in fact, it would be more advantageous for us to hit the huge numbers early than to be bogged down with bigger numbers when we're supposed to be winding down. I mean, 740,000 people for the final year is a huge number. It's a big number. It's more than twice the target for this year. So if in between the 3 years we can begin to hit 1.5, of course we need to be supported in terms of budget allocations that we can do it, to be able to do that. But the costs are going to escalate. They are not going to go down and continue escalating. If we're able to do that, then the final year, the argument will advance here. If we get the money early, it's part of the 6.1. We should not spend more than what has been approved, the 6.1, if it's practically possible. But spend that money early and having to burden the fiscal later, because there'll be competing forces, whatever that is available. So the message will be around us, recruiting learners. It will be around recruiting volunteer educators, the supervisors, as well as the coordinators. We'll also give an indication as to what the minimum qualification expectations are going to be. We will give you contact details by province. We have that list, the contact person by province, so that you don't only call the call center. People can actually call the way it's possible. The person closest to them, who in some cases they may even recognize, we will do that as well. I think it will assist in a given way that we prepare that statement as the chairperson is proposing. That offer in my mind is very general.
So if I can just add, what we have prepared and what we used earlier in the year, we've prepared a very simple pamphlet for people who can read to be able to give the information to people who don't read. And we've done those in all the languages with the call center number on. And we will supply provincial contact points for people in the provinces. The little pamphlet asks for learners to come, but it also asks for matriculants to volunteer, and it explains quite simply what we will expect, that we expect the matriculants to come for training, to be available for 10 hours and a week, and so so on, that kind of support, what we expect from them. And then we also have been, we've made extensive use of community radio stations. And towards that time, we will, there will be a lot of hype with community radio stations announcing the venues and where the classes will be, because every coordinator has to take responsibility for mobilizing the community via the radio station. So those are the kinds of things that will be happening again closer to the campaign. We've kind of struggled to get free media publicity, except for community radio. And SABC in the Eastern Cape has been really good to us, and in Limpopo it's been good to us. In the other provinces, we've really struggled to get media. They expect that it's an expensive campaign, and they want people to pay for publicity. And so those are also some of the problems that we're having. That people, if it's not bad news, it's not news. You know, people don't want to give us that kind of advocacy. But we will be, there will be radio stations, telephone numbers, and then pamphlets on what people can do if they are learners and if they want to volunteer as teachers and what we expect from them. Just simple pamphlets, all the languages, and we'll try and get those out to you as soon as possible.
We do have everyone here who put me into the spot. I attended the local coaching, and I went to our parliamentary team, and I told the web. Then that the phone started coming from home. Remember, every week we can go there and do that. So once I was out of that, people said, this is the plan. You know, everything about it. And I'm saying, and I was pretending to know this. So you can use that from that end. But can you just last question, Domina? The group who are targeted, in order to be part of Kali Gudja, either the person who knows nothing, they have never been to school. If I have my salary, I don't belong. I'm going to get a ticket. Who am I talking to? So that they say, you are the one who is relevant to this.
There are two things. The one is the person who's never been to school, correct, brother? But we're also targeting the ones that dropped out before they reached grade 7.
Because
the functional illiteracy.
Can I just point out that when we call it a starter pack, when a volunteer starts, you get a starter pack, and there are a lot of things in the starter pack, like the training calendar, the training materials, a little booklet of all the rules and regulations. And at the back of that book, there's a little test that they do with the learner. If the learner has been to school, they test, and if he can read and write the little test, he doesn't really fall into that band. So we do take those who haven't, because sometimes you go to school for many years and nothing happens. So we test them, and those who can't complete them, but that's two questions.
So currently the dividing line when I'm addressing my church members there, I think if you are from grade, let's call it standard,
yeah.
We don't know the thing,
yeah.
Standard 5 down, that's what I
think.
Anybody who's from standard 5 down qualified to come and register.
Correct.
We'll assess when you are the best,
yeah.
You know, whether you need.
Correct.
The issue of enthusiasm, there is a lot of enthusiasm for now, and some of the problems that have been highlighted have been given indication that they may lessen that rate of enthusiasm. How are we maintaining, or we just hoping that naturally it will be there to sustain us and to allow us to reach the targets that we have set down. Mm. Is there anything specific that we are doing to ensure that we keep the system?
Let's try to respond to it as public servants. I don't know if you can succeed. But the nuts and bolts about this, we have been saying, for instance, the professor and I, and Dr. Mabuza, that we have been the ones that are talking. Maybe the time that will come, and it has to come fairly soon, that we've got to begin to tell the stories in terms of the people that we're reading. In that video clip, so that you are able to illustrate in graphic terms somebody who claims that I could not read the Bible, that person standing in front of an audience reading a Bible, like this person is saying, I'm running a CC for gardening and cleaning. He's a manager and owner of a company, and yet he doesn't know how to determine what is running the business for. If you cannot differentiate on money, if you can use those examples and begin to tell the stories, as the SABC TV in the past few months has been trying to do, including their TV, has been trying to do, it would somewhat contribute to the sustenance of that enthusiasm. The one point that we didn't know was that that enthusiasm would actually arise when you actually told the story that, look, we beginning this massive campaign, which is intended to do this, and then people vote into their things. We never thought that would happen. The sense that we seem to be having is that, or we're getting as feedback, is that the material seems to be the one that attracts the people the most. The level of understanding and respect for the interaction within the classroom between the volunteer education and the learners themselves is the one that actually brings them back to the next page. The social net that they are actually creating, all people who are regarded as leaders, who now can see themselves graduating from the program and forming a co-op, is something that actually, so the question that we raise about people that could be targeted for them, so that other than them being able to read and count, then they are able to initiate a business that would sustain that social net as they created it. The idea that they come to an environment that is less threatening to people who are illiterate don't want to tell the other that they are. Mm-hmm. It's only when they are in the same platform that, oh, even so-and-so is illiterate, and then the confidence begins to build up. So those people that are illiterate are beginning to block them. You know, like fucking home, whatever that comes, to fuck it, and they become something else, you know, in society that is useful. To give you a direct answer to how the honorable member can sustain that enthusiasm, I can only speak like a preacher, who I am not. It's very difficult, it's something that is very difficult to explain why you don't even know what created it, and what you strongly believe are the elements that actually attracted people to come are the ones that we can reinforce. Whether you then will sustain it is another story. That's why we are pleading with people like yourselves that if everybody is right into the face of the community, that look, this is what this thing is intended, and you begin to speak about personal experiences ourselves and begin to tell people how important it is for them to be literate, it could sustain. It could sustain it really. But we strongly believe that using the examples that have gone through, like the people that read who couldn't read, the 16-year-old who was there, who's never been to school. I mean, she's a girl in social work. There are lots of schools in social work. This girl says, I've never been to school. I think those are experiences that we begin to tell. Because we've been telling lots of the philosophical side of it. The operational side of it. I think we've got to begin to speak about the story that relates to impact and so on, so that people begin to see it. In that way, maybe it could be sustainable.
I wanted to add, that we actually need the constituency offices far more than they need us. We actually need you as the interface between the councillors and the community. We to sustain that kind of advocacy. Okay.
No, my question was whether you have stuff that one can display in the consistent office. Can you get that now?
Can I make a comment?
No, I'm not sustaining your meeting. I'm sustaining that too.
We went to Northway. The premier was chairing the meeting of EXCO. The MEC from Biden made a plea that the honorable member made after seeing the material. And she just said, colleagues, how many of you are literate in the South African language? Or as many as possible. And the answer maybe all of us are literate the language you don't know. And she begged us to send the whole package, all 11 languages and all the materials that we have. I think the point that the members were raising, that you need to have this material yourself, because it could also liberate yourself. You know, very importantly, I know you're struggling speaking Sesotho even now, but when you get to that material, it actually can actually poke your conscience. I didn't want to say that. We know each other, we've been together for years. We know the resistance, where the resistance is coming from. So that material is useful that you have it, because the assessment tool can even assist an individual to self-assess. So we'll supply that material.